Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? When people say stuff like that.
I apologize for them.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism, and I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Don't you worry, Jimmy. I've got your back. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, could you create a list of all the stuff that you and I are at odds over?
I've got a lot of them. I've already got that list.
You've been working on it already. Okay, my list, I can think of one issue, and wow, it's a whopper.
Yeah.
That there are certain times when it comes to timing of the program where I say, hey, let's go back to the mailbag, and you look at me like, hey,
we got a minute left.
Just spread it out and make it work because it's too much of a run. If that is our biggest bone of contention, I think we could start a denomination with that kind of unity right there. But don't you worry, Jimmy. I've got you covered when it comes to emails. Receive this and you're going to say, Friel, this is so self-serving. And you can tell I'm not going to argue with that because it actually is. This is from Canada. An individual took our drive-by theology lessons. It's 35 systematic theology lessons with Dr. Steve Lawson. It also has a study guide. And he actually went through all of the lessons. He condensed it down to 24 weeks. 20, that's half the year practically, going through systematic theology. And who attended this men's Bible study in Canada? Farmers. Mostly farmers. What a beautiful picture. Have you appreciated being in this body that the Lord has brought us into? When you think systematic theology, you think of academicians. These are, the theologians, they sit around and they talk about such things. No, these are believers, farmers in Canada, because this is not an academic pursuit to study theology. It is to study our God, to know our God better, to love our God more. And they concluded the course, and this pastor just sent a really nice note. Some of the comments that were made, why is this not being taught at a younger age? We used to. Can we do this same? We used to teach hermeneutics too to children. We used to teach them how to rightly divide the word of truth, which is another resource available at wretched.org. Can we do this same study again next year? Everyone in the church should do the study. What a beautiful picture. God brings in all shapes and sizes and colors, socioeconomic letters, different sort of laborers versus the executives, all in the kingdom. Why? Because of our love of Jesus Christ, which leads me to my next self-serving thought. That is why I am really excited to share with you next week a new initiative. One of the prongs of this approach, this assault that we are going to make in an effort to try to shine a light in the darkness is to teach believers, to help all of us take that theology from our heads. It's good to learn it, but it's got to do something. Shouldn't just sit there. We don't just want knowledge about God. We want to know Him, and we want to have our emotions changed by Him. We want our wills altered. Theology shouldn't just stay up in your noggin. And we are going to be launching a huge initiative that is going to attempt to do that and a whole lot more. Cannot wait to share it with you. It is going to be a very big initiative. And perhaps you're wondering, Friel, why do you keep teasing this thing? Because we're going to be asking you to respond. That's what we're going to do. We're going to ask you to respond. We're going to ask you to pray for us. We're going to ask you to share what it is that we're going to be producing, and get ready. We're going to ask you to consider supporting it financially. We have a matching gift. Amazing. A $250,000 matching gift for this initiative because it's that big. And we're going to invite you to partner with us to reach more people, to equip more saints, to encourage more local shepherds. Be looking for that announcement and prayerfully consider how you might partner with us. And send stuff to idea@wretched.org.
All right, this is from Thomas. Todd, when a man and a woman are on a date, who should be the one to pay for dinner? What biblical principles can be applied?
That is a bigger issue than I think meets the eye, because it could be casually tossed off. Well, if she's got a job, she can afford it. Hey, this is the 21st century, but it is a signal issue. It is a role issue that you would do well to sort out on a casual date, because the man's role is to be the primary provider. That's our job. That is God's description for the position that men are supposed to occupy, that we're the provider, we're the protector, and the woman is the recipient of that provision and protection. And if you can't get it sorted out on a casual date, it's an issue that is bellwether for you. It's going to tell you what the dynamic is going to be like, and it will reveal both parties' understanding of the roles of men and women. Would I say that it's a sin for a woman to pick up the tab? No, but I'd ask why. You want to establish immediately, I will, and I want to provide for you. That's my job. And I would suggest if you can't get that sorted, you aren't anywhere near considering marriage. I wouldn't get crazy over this, but it is a bellwether issue. It's going to tell you how things are going to go. It is a great revealer of one's attitude toward the dynamic of men and women in a marriage relationship. This is one, I think that's a great issue to sort out. Here's another one for you. This happens to be kind of almost a pet peeve thing for me, and that is joint bank accounts. If you aren't ready to have joint bank accounts, you aren't ready to be married. There, I just said it. If you, it's like, well, no, I've got to keep my, you're not ready to be married. Well, but she's getting married and student debt and nobody, you're not ready to be married. Get it sorted out. Because until your heart says, what's mine is yours. There's no longer yours, mine. It's all ours. That's it. We are one flesh. I'm going to accept your debts, which, by the way, you should disclose if you're dating. And you should be willing to say, then your debts are my debts. That is what a one flesh union is about. And one of the tells of a marriage that doesn't have that sort of unity is when they refuse to have joint bank accounts. I would also encourage you, consider theology. Do not overlook it. I think yesterday we talked about these levels of theology. You can't marry somebody that doesn't have first tier beliefs. The five solas, the essentials, non-damnable doctrine. You got to be square on that. But there are some secondary issues you would do well to get sorted out, because just like denominations that can't do church business together because of these differences, you're going to struggle in your marriage. Believe me, you're going to struggle in your marriage. I think those issues would be gifts. If you're a cessationist, you're dating somebody who's, no, speaking in tongues is good. Which church are you going to go to? Because one of you will go nuts. Well, one way or the other, they're going to get really frustrated. You don't want that. You want to get it sorted. Baptism, where you at on it? You got a Presbyterian and a Baptist? It's not like we're a bird and a fish. But the reality is it's going to be really hard when the kids are born. So get that stuff sorted. One of the most joyful things, it should be an exciting thing, but don't do it as an exercise because you have the end determined. Sit down to talk about these issues to say, you know, before this proceeds apace, we really should talk through some stuff, because if we can't get that sorted, we're going to be increasing danger of having our hearts united and then potentially torn apart. Let's do it now. And that should be something that could even involve other people. Oh, no. That's right. Even your parents. Let them help you. Let them help you. You know, if you want to do something bold, you're young. Call up your parents. Go visit your parents and say, can you tell me some of the decisions I made that you thought I shouldn't have made? and that you would have advised me differently, but you didn't share it with me because I was a bit of a hard-headed knucklehead. And they're not going to go to a file and go, yeah, we got that here. Dewey Decimal says knuckleheaded decisions, Mike. They're going to know them. And without spending a whole lot, they're going to go, yeah, you shouldn't have done this. You shouldn't have pursued that. You shouldn't have dated this person. You shouldn't have bought that vehicle. They're going to, and you're going to hear it and you're going to go, you mean you knew better? Yep. A lot of times they don't bat 1,000. Nobody does, but they bat better than you. That's the reality. Okay, so life is a baseball game. Let's go with this. Life is a baseball game. Your batting average, first of all, you hardly have a record because you just haven't been to the plate very much. Your parents, they've been at this game longer than you have been alive. They have been doing adulting longer than you've been doing living. How many gerunds can you smash into a phrase, Friel? I think I just answered that question. And they've got a higher average. And they can read pitches better. And they see the field better. And they know the dangers. And they see when the infield is moving in, when the shortstop is taking a different... They get all of that. And you don't yet. And that's okay. Someday you will. Until then, be wise. Consult with your parents. And dude, pick up the tab on a date. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. We need more ongoing monthly Wretched Gospel partners because we rely on our supporters to produce all of these resources that reach millions with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. We promise faithful stewardship with every single gift. As a matter of fact, we are ECFA certified. 83% of every dollar given to this ministry goes directly to the work of ministry. You can find out more right now at wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
I'm so excited about this. That's right. I'm actually giddy about Bibles. We are going to be doing another campaign with our good friends at the Masters Academy International. We're going to be sending MacArthur Study Bibles to places that, for various reasons, don't have study Bibles. The amazing Masters Academy International, don't forget they've got the mini seminaries around the globe training indigenous pastors. You can learn more at wretched.org/Bible.
Are you ready to go on an adventure that tackles life's biggest questions head on? Well, we invite you to join John Fabares and Jake Ream on a riveting journey in Road Trip to Truth Season 4. This season, they're hitting the road to explore deep questions about sin, atheism, racism, and the very nature of truth itself. So if you're ready to head out on a road trip, buckle up for the truth. Road Trip to Truth Season 4, available now at wretched.org/4.
You're familiar with the Tomorrow Club's outstanding ministry. Oh, what a testimony. Eastern Europe, Africa, poor, poor, poor places. The Tomorrow Clubs go in. They assemble the kids every week, preach the gospel, have them memorize the Bible, sing songs, love on them, give them some treats. It has been an outstanding ministry for over 20 years. If you can support it, would commend them to you by visiting tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Transformed Season 3. It's finally here, and we're inviting you into the lives of individuals that are facing the giants of fear and guilt and grief. But hey, there's a twist. These aren't your typical battles. These battles have been fought with the sword of the Spirit and the shield of faith. We'll together dive deep into the heart of what it means to be transformed. Transformed Season 3 can be found right now at wretched.org/transformed3.
Who will speak for those who are staggering to the slaughter? Seems like right now would be a good time to encourage you to support Preborn Ministries. They're in the game. They're working hard to save babies and save mommies and daddies with the gospel. So if you are energized about life, that's something you can do. You can support Preborn. Preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 387 AD. Augustine of Hippo is converted. His writings became bedrock for the Middle Ages and were influential in the Reformation.
The Confessions and City of God are still read by many. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
How much easier does this need to be? This is Wretched Radio. Not only can you send wretched stuff to idea@wretched.org, you can text questions, comments, conundrums, snarks. It's as easy as sending a text to 877-282-2337.
And that's exactly what Anonymous did. They recently texted in and said, Todd, I was wondering about the NASB 20. If it's a sound variation of the NASB 95.
Is it a mostly reliable translation? Yes. Did they make positive advancements when they updated it from 1995? No. I don't think that they did. They took some editorial liberties that I think are off. In not like the whole thing is a mess, but it's typically the issue of genders. When translations get updated, and as a rule, we shouldn't be that concerned about updated translations because language changes. And an editor then can go in and update it if they don't change the actual text itself. And typically what we will see in updated versions, I think we saw this with the NIV, to a degree with the NASB, the man versus people. In some instances, they got it right. In other instances, they got it very wrong. And they bent more toward an egalitarian position in some of their editorial choices. So personally, I stick with the 1995 version. And besides that, I just can't. I've tried. I really tried to read other translations. I just can't. It's like I'm being unfaithful. We got married in 1995, and I'm not going to go looking for a new translation. Jimmy, did you read the Legacy Bible translation?
Actually, I've made the switch to it. I know.
You're unfaithful to NASB 1995.
You're not going to notice that much of a difference.
No, I've looked into it enough, but I don't know. It's like, that's the one I've always read. I'm just going to stick with it at this point. But I've heard really good things about the Legacy. What do you like about it?
I like the bringing back of Yahweh in the Old Testament.
Yep, right.
I like that. I like that they maintain the capitalization of the pronouns, which some translations have stopped doing. Well, that's a pet peeve.
That's not
I know, but
that's
still.
That's more of a grammar than it is an editorial.
Right, right.
That, you know what? I've got to capitalize pronouns when it talks about the Lord. It's like, even if it's something inconsequential, I go back and, I didn't capitalize him. I just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say you're sinning if you don't, but it's really close. So you like the Legacy Bible?
I do.
Okay, here's a thought experiment for you. Here's a challenge for you. The issue of translations and chapters and word break, the Legacy Bible lays it out a little bit differently compared to other translations.
Right.
They put the verse, wherever it's on a new line.
Right.
Okay. And I'm sure that their reasoning behind it was to make sure that people, it was just probably just easier for tracking. But those numbers and those paragraph breaks aren't in the original manuscripts. Now, please, I believe that they have been very helpful. Otherwise, your pastor would start out by saying, please turn to the book of Romans and go to about 2/3 of the way down because that's about where now they're very helpful in helping us identify to memorize. But there is a danger in having verse numbers and paragraph breaks. I think there's the two dangers would be that sometimes we miss the flow, and I'm not talking about the diner waitress. We miss the thrust and the movement of the argument that is being made because they're broken up. And an example of that, because I've been seeing it as we've been preaching our way through the Gospel of Matthew, is in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is talking about money. Hold on. Jesus is talking about chapter 6. All right, so verse 24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And then inserted, because it's in italics, it says as a headline, do not be anxious. Oh, okay, so we're moving on to a new thought. We're going to talk about anxiety. The two are connected. Now, not every translation does this, but the ESV that I'm holding, it goes into do not be anxious. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious. Well, that therefore connects money and anxiety. And because the paragraph break is there, and even frankly, because the numbering system is implemented, you miss the flow of that. Here's a challenge for you. Go to the internet and find an epistle and read it without any of the paragraph breaks or any of the numbers and see if it doesn't feel different to you. Just see if it doesn't make more sense of the argument. I think that is especially helpful in the Epistle of James. We've often heard it described as the New Testament book of Proverbs. No, it's not. It has a flow. And I think what moves us toward understanding these are just little proverbial statements is the numbering system. I'm not saying we should do away with it. I'm just saying we're not getting the original and potentially we're losing the thrust of the argument. Here's the second danger with the paragraph breaks and the numbering system. I think even expositors can miss the flow of the book or the flow of the section because of the paragraph breaks. For instance, the Sermon on the Mount. I don't fall on the side of it was a number of separate teachings that Matthew compiled and just kind of put it together to give us a sampling of his teaching style. I don't think that's the case. Now, whether you want to call it a sermon or teaching, I think it's more teaching, but they're not disjointed thoughts. They flow together. And that so much is missed. Here's what can happen. And maybe, dear pastor, this is something you can keep an eye out for. You want to be an expositor, and it's a natural paragraph break. So you go there and you grab that paragraph and you just mine it for all it's worth. And that's good. And that can be a right use of the text if you're doing a topical sermon. But if you do that without understanding the flow of the argument, you're going to miss it. Now, here's case in point. The Sermon on the Mount. What was Jesus doing with that sermon? Was he just kind of shooting out one-liners on divorce and taking oaths and looking with lust? Oh, there's the Beatitudes. No, he starts out with the Beatitudes. And he moves then to reveal what a born-again Christian looks like, what the standard for entrance into that kingdom is, and demolish the Pharisaical system of external religiosity. That is the thrust of the entire sermon. And so if you just go into that sermon, for instance, and you're taking a look at it, you want to preach on the, you've heard it said of old, thou shalt not commit adultery. Okay. Can you go to that section to talk about lust? Yep. Can you go to that section to talk about where sin begins? Absolutely. Can you go to that paragraph that if you look with lust, you've committed adultery in your heart and talk about sexual purity and that we should not be willing to say, I'm a Christian with this propensity? No, if it's sinful, you reject it. You do not have that a part of your identity. You can do all of that. But that's not what Jesus was doing in the text. It's not what he was doing. Now, all of those things are right. But Jesus was smashing external religiosity. He was helping the hearers understand you don't have a chance. And that is why there's at least two instances throughout the Sermon on the Mount. Be perfect, just as your heavenly Father is perfect. And his comments on adultery are connected to that. See, this is the standard. Your righteousness needs to exceed the scribes and the Pharisees. You ever look with lust? You aren't even coming close, are you? That was the purpose of that passage. And again, I will say this so that you don't think that we toss out all of the details and that we stop plumbing the depths of these texts. But if we do it without a context, I think it misses the oomph. If you read through the Sermon on the Mount from beginning to end, by the time Jesus finally goes about the business of landing the plane, when he gets to Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, he's finally going to give gospel. Hey, you don't have a chance. Your mouth has been impure. Your eyes are impure. Your thought life is impure. You don't love the way that you're supposed to love. You're phony in your religiosity. You don't pray the way that you should. You're taking stupid blasphemous oaths. You're not treating women well in divorce. And not only that, here's the coup de grace. Here's the coup d'etat. Here's like the nail into the coffin of your self-righteous heart. Are you ever judgmental, critical, censorious? I can't do any of this. And that then is when Jesus says, enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go into it. The narrow gate is difficult, the way that leads to life. And there are few who find it. It's a plea. We should be undone by the Sermon on the Mount. I can't climb that mountain of righteousness. Bingo. Now you're ready for good news. And if we lose the thrust of that because a paragraph breaks, well, we can be doing some good expositing, but it could be expositing that misses the point. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.